everybody. Welcome to 500 Open Tabs. I'm your host, Hannah Hillam.
I'm your other host, Kaveh Taharian, and welcome back to the show.
Exciting. Episode
14?
14.
Yes. We've made it through 14 How? Episodes. It's pretty impressive. Can you believe it?
Yeah. Consistency that I don't have with anything else in my life.
That's not true. You were very good at posting a lot of comics for a while.
Oh, that's right. That's true.
This before on the show. That's the weird, like, neurotic thing that you and I cranked out at one point in our lives, which I think is why we're able to do this.
Yeah. I mean, I used to, like, look at the newspaper and be like, how do they do that every single day? And then I did it, and I'm like, oh, because they're insane. They can't stop. They're obsessive.
Well, a lot of them, they did it ahead of time a lot of times. You know, they would, I think Bill Watterson would be like, I would spend a month just writing.
And just then do he them would, all. Like,
all the, he would block them all out, and then he would sketch them all out. I think, I don't know
then
if Schultz
Jim Davis.
Worked that way. I forget.
Jim oh, Davis just hired a bunch of people, yeah. Have you ever seen Garfield minus Garfield?
I have seen that. Yes, where it's like John is just an insane person.
He's just talking to himself, and it's the saddest. It's such a sad thing because he's just like so lonely.
Well, because you realize anyway. That Garfield has thought bubbles. He's never actually talking to John.
John is just talking all the sad things he says about being like alone and sad. Yeah. He's just talking to his cat.
It's the accurate experience of what it's like to own a cat, I imagine, right? You're the cat lady,
yeah.
You know? You're a cat lady that has cats, but you're like the cat, you're the cat-fluencer.
Cat-fluencer. Oh, I'm not going to dignify that with an answer.
Very well. On that note, let's get into it.
Just kidding. I should lean into it. You're right. Living with a cat is pretty much just being lonely out loud.
Ooh, that sounds like a good song lyric, being lonely out loud.
Being lonely out loud. And the music video is just somebody talking to their cat. Well, I was thinking more like, cat, what's it like not to live in a capitalist system? You know, actually, I ask my cat that all the time. I'm like, you're just laying there.
Mm. Any good
not
answers
contributing.
Yet?
No. okay. They don't care.
They don't care. They don't care about anything, but we care about making sure that these intros are not too long. So look at that for a transition. We're going to go into it this week. I believe you're up first.
I am.
Right? Yes. Time is a flat circle. I don't remember what anything was. But okay, go ahead. What do you got for us?
It is an article that I've had saved in my my Apple News app for like since 2018. Ooh. So I was like, I'm going to go look at the articles because I tend to, you know, lean toward just having Wikipedia lists open because that's my jam. Mm-hmm. And so I went to the articles and I found one that just the title, the clickbait title is perfect. And it is titled, it's by Jason Battelle. It was written for National Geographic in 2018. And it's titled, "These Ants Decorate Their Homes with the Heads of Their Enemies." Mm. Now, yes. And if you're like me and you live on, you know, West Coast America, you say ants and ants the same, ants, the insect, and ants, your mom's sister kind of thing. So those like me, this is not
aunt.
The family member.
Aunt versus ants. Yeah.
Yes. This is not about aunts. Auntie. This is about ants, the little insects. So these ants, this article is wild because the picture is of this, like an actual photo of a bunch of little ants surrounded by like other ant heads. And it looks wild. And I wanted to steer clear of death, but like it didn't work this time because, you know, I'm always
Why
talking about
would
it.
Why you want to do that?
Because I wanted to challenge myself.
Talking about it. You're like, so I'll have headless ants.
Yeah. So I was like, oh, this is interesting. It's about nature. No. It's all horrible.
Death and nature.
The article begins with these scientists who are trying to figure, it's like 50, let's go back to 1950, right? And these scientists start observing these ants. They're called headhunter ants. And
a little bit on the nose there, but sure.
A little bit. And they start noticing that these ants in their nests have a ton of just severed heads. And in the 50s, they're like, huh? Like they couldn't figure it out. And so they just kind of like didn't look into it anymore because they were like, I don't understand this. Until like 2015 when...
That's a long time to just be like, I'm going to look the other way while ants are committing ant genocide, like decapitating other ants.
Oh, yeah. Well, they'd still observe it, but they couldn't figure out why or how, because the thing about headhunter ants is that they're tiny and they are not predators. They're just little ants. And the ants they target, the ants whose heads they like, are these bigger ants called trap jaw ants. And they're Yeah, dude, their jaws, they have mandibles that are massive and they can like crack another bug to pieces or whatever. And and they'll do this thing where they'll like they'll bite something and then use their mandibles to launch themselves away from the enemy. So like I saw this insane video of what looked like a sarlacc pit, and there was like something there was a little
guy. I'm impressed with that
it.
Reference, by the way. I'm just gonna weigh in real quick. I'm
you,
so proud of you.
Do you think I haven't seen it?
You just made a movie reference. You never make movie references in anything ever. Okay. And you made us. And Sarlacc's
That's
a pretty
true.
Specific reference.
It is. Anyway, the looks like a little sarlacc pit. This little little creature who lives in it. They're called ant lions, and I don't know what they are because I didn't really look into it. But they're other insects that make these like weird quicksand sarlacc pits to like pull ants into. Trap jaw ants are like, yeah, well, we'll do better than that. And they go in head first and they like latch onto these things and launch right back out. So they're like these really buff, super hardcore ants who use their teeth to like murder.
Hold on. Let's back up here. So are they is it like they're doing like a handstand with their mandibles into this pit and then just jumping off like that?
Absolutely. And if you think that's an exaggeration, it's not.
I'm saying, why are they even doing, are they killing them in the process, or they're just like, I'm gonna go jump inside of certain doom for fun?
I definitely made it seem like they did it on purpose, but no, they fell into it. So if they find themselves falling into this like ant pit or whatever it is,
gotcha,
then they'll
gotcha.
Be like they'll move themselves so they like head first. So I'm getting you introduced to these three ants we're going to be talking about. So there's the trap jaw ants, there's the headhunter ants, and there's the kidnapper ants. And all three of these ants.
I wonder what that one does.
No, it just hangs out. So all three of these ants are going to come into play. So headhunter ant is small and normal. Mm-hmm. And then the kidnapper ant I'll get to, but not quite yet.
Okay.
So all three of these ants live in Florida. This story takes place in Florida because
of course this is
that's Florida. Where all terrifying and confusing things are from or live in,
there's an ant newspaper that's like Florida Man or like right, but it's Florida Ant
Man.
Does blank. Yeah, Ant Man.
Florida Ant does
Florida
blank,
ant.
Yeah.
Yeah. They go on Florida their ant Google and they're like, just type in your birthday in Florida Ant and then see what happens.
Florida Ant lights house on fire with nobody in it. Yeah. So what these scientists couldn't figure out for the longest time is how these tiny, not predatory ants were completely like taking out these predatory ants, the trap jaws. And they would do it so quickly they couldn't see. So they were like, so they come into contact, and then the next thing we know, they're carrying the headhunter ants are like carrying the trap jaw ants back to their nest, dead. And they couldn't figure
straight
it out.
French Revolution style. Yeah. They've got like an ant guillotine.
The streets of Paris ran red with ant blood, and they couldn't figure out how.
Watch out, Jeff Bezos. I know he just moved to Florida. Those ant guillotines are going to basically be coming for you. Yeah, for tax
they
purposes.
They are anti-capitalist.
Although I think he's from there. Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah, ants are very much about, anyway, sorry, I just derailed that.
Bugs
but
life.
I just imagined a bunch of ants showing up with their mini guillotine showing up outside of
Jeff
Bezos' giant
Florida
mansion.
House. But if there's enough of them, they could carry him off. That was like
a
recurring dream I used to have. I used to have a recurring dream that ants would come
decapitating
in and take
Jeff Bezos.
Oh, no, that's my other recurring dream. But this one was like ants would come in and carry my furniture away and I couldn't stop them.
Oh, interesting.
Anyway.
Like, was that a bad thing? Like, was that a fear, or you just thought it was like a random thing that would happen?
It was just like a thing. And in my dream, I'd be like, "What? Hey, what do you give
back?" But it wasn't like you were like it wasn't like a fear of ants. It was just sort of like ants are funny and they do this weird thing.
And they're taking my furniture. Anyway,
that's funny. You're like, what are you going to do with it? You can't sit on that chair. You're silly.
Exactly. That was the kind of thing it was. It was like, hold on, that's a couch.
Hold on there.
Anyway, I derailed myself. So
I love this. You know, I love ants. I was obsessed with ants from the time I was a kid. I talk about the Sim Ant game all the time. I felt like
I didn't
or maybe
realize.
It was the other show. No, I do. I do talk about Sim Ant all the time. I love it. And ant stories
like
make me really excited.
Oh, you're going to love this then.
Ant stories get me really stoked. Yeah, I was like, I'm really into it. Keep going.
Okay, so So these trap jaw ants, so they, no one can figure out how these like tiny, seemingly prey style ants are killing these predator ants.
Yeah.
And recently, a guy from Florida named Adrian Smith started to figure it out. And among other scientists as well, but he's kind of like the head. He's the head of the Evolutionary Biology and Behavior Lab at North Carolina's Museum of Natural Sciences. So he's like an ant scientist, which I kind of dove into the world. Oh, he's, dude, this guy's amazing. I want to meet him.
Yeah.
The way he talks about ants. Like, so,
if you're listening
example,
to this podcast, please come Adrian, join us for an episode where you can talk about ants.
Tell us the way he says things. Okay, listen to this. He sounds like one of us. He heard about this study they did back in the 50s and how they couldn't figure it out. And he's like, oh, I'm going to figure this out. And he said he just got obsessed with it. And he quote, he says, they're one of the most badass ants I know of. And that's why I wanted to study them. They decorate their nests with skulls. A lot of other ants do cool things, but these are special to me. Wait, these are special to me because they're from Florida and I'm from Florida. Weird shit happens in Florida.
This guy is metal as shit. I love him.
Same. He's amazing. And this is how this interview, I read this interview with him, and this is how he just talks about ants. He's just like, yeah, they're insane. I'm obsessed. So Adrian, he sets up these high-speed cameras. He like creates an ant nest, like, you know, simulates an ant that would be in nature. And he is able to observe them in slow motion. And he's like, he realizes what happens is that they're so fast that the human eye can't tell what they're doing until we've slowed it down. So what? Here's what happens. So when a headhunter ant gets near a trap jaw ant, it high-speed squirts acid out of a nozzle on its abdomen and paralyzes it. Yes.
What?
Your face? Yes. He has it's like an acid gun built into his body.
Amazing.
I know. And so it paralyzes them. And see these I keep saying acid nozzle. I don't think that's what they're called, obviously.
I like it. We've decided it's acid nozzle.
Is it acid nozzle?
Or you can acid nipple if you want. Just squirting.
I mean, no, it like shoots. So these acid nozzles are on other types of ants in the same like genus or whatever.
Yeah.
But only headhunter ants use them for attack. The other ones use them as defense. But this, so he was like, "What? Why are these things actually actively going and attacking these bigger things?" And that was the next question. He's like, "Okay, so now we know how they do it, but like, why?" So what would happen next is that the headhunter ant would carry the trap jaw ant back to their nest and over the course of a day would dismember it, including decapitating it. And the decapitation was important because that was the thing they didn't eat. They'd like eat the rest of it, but not the head. And
it's a whole
their nest,
genus of dude, Jeffrey Dahmer's, basically.
Serial killers. Serial killers.
They keep the head in the fridge while they ate the rest of the body parts.
For real. For real. And then they would just, these heads would just be strewn about their lair or their nest.
All I'm picturing is like when you go into your friend's car who just has like cans and water bottles and coffee cups everywhere. And they're like, oh, just move that out of the way so you can sit so I can drive. But like
just
with
the heads.
Giant ant heads. Yeah, just move the heads out of the, just throw it in back. It's fine.
They did a bunch of other tests and they realized that these are the only ants that they go after. And that they do this too. Like, these headhunter ants only go after bigger and most of the time just the trap jaw ants. Another thing they discovered was that all ants kind of like coat themselves with like a waxy smell, like a waxy, like gunk.
It's like a pheromonal type thing, right? Or like
it is, yeah.
That's how they, a lot of communication, how that works.
That's exactly it, solely how it works. Yeah. So all these ants have different like, colonies have different smells. What they realize is that headhunter ants, their smell matches the smell of trap jaw ants closer than anything else, which told them that headhunter ants have evolved to smell more like trap jaw ants because that gets them enough time to walk up to the trap jaw ant, trick it, and then paralyze it.
They've literally evolved so their only purpose is to murder these ants.
Yes. Absolutely. Uh-huh. That's the hypothesis.
Which is more questions. But why?
Right. Well, that's the other thing. Then they're like, so they realized that, like, through evolution, they found that that was the easiest way to survive because they kill the predator that's in the area and they keep mm-hmm. that predator's head in their house to let other predators know, like, no, right. you can't come in here. Obviously, this guy's the...
Obviously, yeah.
And so the hypothesis is that it's just another way to stay alive, which makes sense enough to me. Like, I don't think there's any other reason.
Which I like to call
wild?
The Peter Stump ant philosophy.
Werewolf ants.
Werewolf ants! I'm sorry, I just got really excited.
I know. You can yell.
To contain myself. Continue.
hang on, here's the question. Would the ants grow to the size of a werewolf, or would it be a tiny werewolf?
I think it's a tiny werewolf.
You think so?
Ants, but then if we think about, okay, we're totally derailing this, but this is an important discussion to have.
It is.
What, like, we think about wolves, like, what would a wolf be to an ant, right? So I feel like it wouldn't be another giant mammal. It would have to be something of comparable size.
Oh, so like a beetle.
Something like that. Yeah, it would be like an ant beetle or something. It would have to transform into something that they fear will attack its livelihood or livestock or like whatever it's gathered, like a spider ant or something.
Oh, yeah. A spider ant. Gross.
Spider ant. Like at midnight, it turns into like a spider or something. You know what I mean? Like that's sort of what
spider.
How the lore. Yeah, yes, could be hairy
it
too.
It
makes
that way a deal with
hairy.
Satan. Yeah, just like the lore.
Ooh,
it opens up hell and is like, I'd like to turn into a spider, please.
Yeah, and it has a cool belt that it wears whenever it wants to turn into that spider.
Yeah. We got to add this to our pitch when we pitch this movie.
The Peter Stump movie or the
ant? Yes, he's an ant.
Yes, okay.
Both. We're going to here's the thing. Here's my idea. We're going to remake Bug's Life with a whole lot more decapitated heads.
Just greenlit immediately.
And way more parts of the,
how
like,
much money?
The ants, like,
let me get my checkbook real quick. Hold
dink.
On. Sorry.
Oh, okay. Yeah. You're going to write it to me right now? Oh my gosh. I'm so honored.
Yes.
But the twist of the movie is that Flick is actually a werewolf. So I think that's good. I think we got it.
Ship it. We got it.
Ship it. Yep.
CGI the fish. Let's fast track this one. Make the old guy young.
I've derailed that. We've both derailed so hard. I don't know where I am.
You were talking about werewolves. I don't remember, actually. No, I forgot.
Yeah,
hold on.
Oh, yeah, they evolved to mimic these stronger ants because...
Right,
but that's super weird. That's really uncommon. You don't see that a lot in nature where something's like a snake is like... Or not a snake. Like a zebra is like, I'm going to evolve to look like a lion, kind of. And that way I can...
So I can kill it.
So I can go near enough to it to trick it enough that I can murder it. Like, that doesn't make sense. Like, wouldn't you just...
do they technically even exist? Aren't they technically the prey now? I'm sorry, the predators in this situation? They're literally killing these things and then eating them.
Yeah.
But, I feel like it's reversed.
It is, but only in this situation. And so they think that just this one... Is it genus or species? Like, part of the family
genus
of these ants.
Yeah, I think species is the whole thing, and then genus is
the,
I don't know.
And then, like, whatever their little break off of the species is the only one to have, like, weirdly imprinted on these enemies of theirs, which, I mean, it kind of sounds awesome. Like, imagine if we did that.
Yeah.
Well.
It is really, yeah.
You don't have to imagine.
I guess we just.
We do worse. So this is where, so while they were trying to figure out like why they did this and the way mm-hmm. they came to the conclusion that like, oh, they masked themselves with their scent is because Adrian Smith was like, well, let's look at another predator that feeds, that specifically attacks the headhunter ants. So this is what makes the headhunter ants prey is because another kind of ant called the kidnapper ant.
Oh, right. I forgot.
Specifically targets the headhunter ant because they think that their mandibles are better at chomping food. So
there's so many conspiracies happening at once.
Dude, this is where it's about to get grisly. I mean, it's already grisly, but
I wish I had popcorn.
I'm so happy you're enjoying this because last night I was I sure hope he likes ants. These kidnapper ants, they live all over the place. They're kind of like normal ants.
Uh-huh.
And the kidnapper ants have really pointy mandibles, but these mandibles suck at chomping up food. And so they evolved to realize that, like, oh, those ones over there have better mandibles for food chomping, the ones that can saw a head right off of that bigger ant. And so they were like, we're gonna kidnap those ones. Those are going to be our slaves, because these ants used to be called slaver ants until scientists were like, ugh.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I've heard of this before. I was wondering if it was the same thing.
Okay, so let's just, I'm gonna paint the picture. So the kidnapper ants will send a scout out because they're like, we need some more worker ants to chew our food for us because we're a bunch of useless pieces of crap. And the kidnapper ant scout goes into the nest of the headhunter ant and kind of like pokes around. Mm-hmm. And they're like, oh, yeah, this seems like a good place to, you know, thieve things from.
Yeah.
Steal. That's the word I was looking for.
Steal. Yeah.
So the scout, she, and they're all women, by the way, all these ants we've talked about, all ladies, because the men they die pretty quick after fertilization. So girl power, you know, girl boss.
I think that's like most ant colonies are just all, essentially all female.
Same with bees and stuff like that.
They're almost all female.
Mm-hmm. So she goes out and she finds a good one to raid, and she comes back and tells all of her buddies and sisters, and she's like, I found a good nest to raid. And so they, mm-hmm. that's literally what it is. It's a raid. These slightly bigger red kidnapper ants just raid the nest of headhunters, and they go in there and it freaks all the headhunter ants out because they're like, what's going on? And while they're all freaked out, the kidnapper ants take all their babies.
Oh.
They use their pointy mandibles to like grab the little babies and take them.
Yeah.
And then they raise them as their own. And the way they do that is they coat them in their scent, which is where Adrian got the idea. Like, oh, these ants are able to trick these kidnapped ants into believing that they're part of this colony. Once they grow up, they just get to work like it's their colony. And they end up doing everything. So the headhunter ants end up catching the food, chewing it up for the kidnapper ants, take care of the young, literally do everything, like take care of like the little nest or whatever, all while the kidnapper ants are just sitting in a pile.
Yeah, sitting in a pile?
They're in a pile. They all just sit there. They don't do anything.
What?
They just eat the food that their slaves prepare for them.
And, oh my God.
Until they need more slaves, and then they send another scout out. Now, another way they do it.
Hold on, I have a question for you, and you might not be able to answer this, but I'm just curious. So you said that they cover them initially in the dominant colony is covering the bodies of the children of the other colony in their own scent to trick them.
Yes.
Uh-huh. So then I don't know enough about this, but are those babies as they grow up then creating like the correct scent, like that's in correspondence with what their captors kind of were, or do they just keep coating them with the same? Is that like part of what they have to do, is just continuously cover them in that scent so that they never actually like snap out of it?
I think I don't know, but I would guess that they have to keep covering them in it, because otherwise there's no reason for the kidnapper ants to keep having more kidnapper ants.
If yeah, you're right. Cause they could
grow up. Yeah, I assume, because it doesn't make sense. Like, they're not kidnapper ants. They're headhunter. So I think they just have
headhunter ants. They probably have to. This is one job that they have to do. Yeah.
Yeah.
If anyone knows about ant stuff, please let us know either in the comments or send us an email, 500opentabs@gmail.com, 500opentabs@gmail.com. I want to know.
Really,
I'm very curious about this.
We need to know this. Because
clearly, Hannah didn't know that I was very excited about ant stuff.
I had no idea. I'm delighted. But yeah, so really quick, another way that the kidnapper ants operate is sometimes they send a scout out and the queen of the kidnapper ants will go and do it herself. So she'll go and sneak into the headhunter ants' house or whatever it
can't
is.
Can't trust anybody.
No,
can't,
and she'll...
Can't rely on some underling to do your job. You have to do it yourself.
For real. She goes in there and she finds the headhunter queen and she murders her.
Oh!
And then wait for it. Then she, quote unquote, this is what Adrian Smith says, quote unquote, bathes in her bodily fluids. After that, she squirts out a bunch of eggs and they hatch. And then now they're like infiltrated and they can hatch and just immediately like kidnap.
Wild.
Yeah. So they exist just to kidnap and make other ants feed them.
Other ants. Wow.
And take care of their babies. And those are the headhunter ants. And I mean, okay, as imagine this, you're the queen of a kidnapper ant. You go in there and you're like, what's with all these heads? Why do these people have heads everywhere? But yeah. You're like, oh, I got to do my job and just kill this queen. But what's with the heads?
I'm just trying to think of like the propaganda, like amongst all these groups of like how they're trying to portray each side where they're like, well, these guys chop off heads. So we got to do this before they get to, you want them to chop off your, like, I'm talking about ant politicians here. Vote for me,
please,
and we'll murder all these ants that are chopping off heads. And then the head chopping ants are like, listen, these other dudes will attack us because they got super sharp mandibles. And then they do like handstands off of, you know, giant pits in the ground like Sarlacc. What do you think they're going to do when they come to ours? They're going to do that to us. We have to murder them first.
Well, they think that like part of the reason why they cut the heads off and keep the heads is to keep the kidnapper ants out.
Yeah, that makes sense, but it doesn't work, like, does it?
Ooh, no, it doesn't. Because the kidnappers' lives depend on kidnapping. And so...
Yeah.
It's just
damn.
Like...
They should be murdering the kidnapper ants and then putting their heads on there.
I thought that. But then I was like, we could just eliminate the trap jaw ants, but... And just kill the kidnapper ants.
Listen, first, this is like your stock portfolio. The key is diversity. You have to diversify the kinds of heads that you're chopping off and put in decorating your home with. Nobody wants to see one style of chopped head.
You won't get anywhere with that.
Got to make sure you diversify. Yeah.
You're only going to have one type of head in your house. And then what?
You're up Schitt's Creek without a paddle. Gotta have multiple heads. That's the first rule of investing.
The point is, at the end of all of this, they're not actually certain why the heads happen or why they even go through all the. I mean, it's just like they have all these hypotheses that thesis statement, closing statement is they still don't know why, but they think they do, which is what science is.
Okay.
And Adrian Smith is one of so many crazy ant scientists. Like, there was this woman, what's her name? Another ant scientist, and she's so dope looking. She's, like, covered in tattoos. She looks like a total hardcore, and she's like, yeah, I love ants. Like, I love you. I love all of
you. Kind of on board, yeah.
Yeah. They all seem like really, really dope, like, people that are into these. Mm-hmm. So next time you look at ants on the ground, just remember they might be going to murder children, other children ants, other ant kids, or cut heads off of.
I mean, that kind of makes me want to step on them, frankly, because I'm like, they're going to commit some sort of weird, like,
genocide
thing. But genocide, but I'm not going to do that.
No.
Wow.
That was kind of a quick story. I'm done.
That was really cool, though. I like it. I like it a lot. I got
ant
really
warfare.
Excited.
And I'll send you some videos of this.
That's usually what happens for me at every family reunion is ant warfare, is all the ants start fighting with each other. I'm sorry, the aunts. The aunties all start to fight with each other. But that's a story for another day.
And not for this podcast.
Not for this podcast.
Unless you want to start another fight. But yeah, that's my crazy ant story.
I love it. I love ants. I love all the different weird, insane. There's so many weird ants. There's so many different genes, like weird types of ants.
Dude, I found an ant doing all of this called the big-headed ant, and it's just a regular-sized ant with a giant head, and it looks so stupid. It looks so dumb. I want you to Google big-headed ant. It looks like such a doofus.
Should I do it right now?
Do big-headed it. Ant. Just go type in big-headed ant.
Big-headed ants. It looks like Darth Helmet from Spaceballs.
Yes, it does. It totally does. Oh, so you mean like a, looks like a penis.
Oh, listen, you said it, not me. It always comes back to the giant dick-headed thing.
They should call it the dick-headed ant. So,
the dick-headed ant. Hey there, this is Adreed Kaveh, here to give that poor little guy host Kaveh a break. Hannah and I would like to ask you for help by going to nebula.tv/500opentabs and signing up for Nebula, where they have exclusives like Why Our TVs Wanted to Kill Us in 90s Movies by Tech Alter. Ever notice that 90s movies were obsessed with evil media? Shows plunging societies into ruin, video games that trap and torture players, and VHS tapes that kill anyone that watches them? What caused this sudden obsession? These kinds of wonderful video essays never cease to amaze me. I had to get a master's and go countless thousands of dollars into debt. But you kids now? You can get an annual subscription to Nebula that gives you the same insights for the cost of a carton of eggs, at the time of this recording, probably. You can find this video and dozens of other high production originals on Nebula, a video streaming platform built by and for creators. And along with videos and podcasts, you can now learn new skills in Nebula's fully produced classes. Go to nebula.tv/500opentabs and get 40% off an annual subscription. By signing up, you can support other creators like Maggie Mayfish, Princess Weeks, and many more. Remember, sign up at nebula.tv/500opentabs. Otherwise, Hannah and I will assume you hate us and will cry, much like host Kaveh is doing right now from not being allowed to talk for a whole 2 minutes. Well, thank you. That was amazing. I love ants. Anything ant-related, I get very excited about.
Did not know that about you.
And that was cool.
Fun. What do you
got for
me?
This is why we do the shows, so we can learn something every day about each other, every time we record.
I know. Remember that lady at Comic-Con who was like, you guys need to learn more about each other.
That's right. She made me feel really bad.
That was,
she also said something else. I can't remember.
I didn't feel good about it. She's like, you guys are friends? I'm like, yeah. She's like, you need to learn more about each other. Like, oh.
Listen, sometimes friendships are about learning about each other over the course of a lifetime. Thank you very much.
Really weird.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No thanks to her. Anyway, so my tab is a continuation of the broader story about the birth of the motion picture camera. Try not to get too excited. I know that sounds super fascinating.
It does.
Actually.
It genuinely does.
This is. Last week, I wanted to talk about that because I just thought that, you know, Louis Le Prince should have had his own little story. And I wanted to kind of, like I said, reclaim the narrative of who he was because I thought that he seemed like a sweet guy. But this week's story is the one where I was kind of like, what the hell? So this is the one that's kind of like a wackier story, which I thought was funnier. So just a quick recap, if you didn't get a chance to listen to last week's episode or you've forgotten it, if you haven't listened to it, you should go listen to it. But last week we discussed the birth of the motion picture camera invented by man of the people, Louis Le Prince, and not stupid pants-shitting Thomas Edison.
No.
We have to stick with Edison a little bit longer, but mostly to talk about how he sucks and everyone hated him and he smelled bad probably. Remember, so last we had heard from Louis Le Prince, he was on his way to present his motion picture camera and his little, you know, quick clips that he had made to a group of people in New York City, but mysteriously disappeared before he was able to arrive. And thus, he was never able to get credit for creating the camera and all that. And that's essentially is the setting for all the stuff that happens in this week's tab.
Okay, got it. So we leave off
the other thing
with
you have to remember is he's off, he's gone. He doesn't come back in the story. He's unfortunately
dead.
He's done so. Dead.
Unfortunately,
or ran away.
He's done so. I just pictured you like as a cop delivering news to like a family and be like, unfortunately, he's done so.
Or as a doctor, just being like, we tried our best, but your father is done so. The surgery was botched.
Your father is 100% done so.
What? A hundo done so.
A hundo done so.
That sounds like a Star Wars character.
It's like, oh, Hondo Dunzo's in this episode.
I am Master Jedi Hondo Dunzo.
We should draw Hondo Dunzo.
He's the only one that can do a handstand out of the Sarlacc pit.
Yeah.
But he gets decapitated at the end.
Sometimes our favorites have to die. Have to be Dunzo. Should we draw this? I think
Hondo
we should.
Dunzo.
Or so
we
everybody
should,
else draw it. Put it in the doodles tab of
the Discord. He has to look like an ant Jedi, I think, is Hondo Dunzo.
Yeah, Hondo Dunzo.
I'm going to have to now deliver an entire tab without being able to sit down and draw Hondo Dunzo. This is torture.
I want to draw him right now.
Me too. Should we just scrap the rest of the step? Forget my tab. Let's go draw. No.
You may as well.
Derailed. Okay. So just remember, Edison was in the practice of filing. Remember the caveats? So the caveats were the kind of IOU patents caveats. Where he's like, here's an idea. Caveats. Yeah. And it was the IOUs where he was like, here's the idea I have. I haven't really figured it out. And then they basically were like, cool, just keep renewing it until somebody actually challenges you. And then you actually have to fill it out.
So dumb.
So he was doing all of that. And when he had done that, he had hired, if you remember, William Dixon to work in his labs. And William Dixon was going to simultaneously develop what would go on to become the Kinetto's graph and scope, respectively. One was to capture video. The other was to play it back. And remember, Edison, this is his practice at the time. He's filing like a million other patents at the same time. And he's just trying to get all these different projects off the ground. Because, you know, he doesn't have time to get his hands dirty with all that, you know, actual inventing.
He's a businessman.
He's like, yeah, you know, I'm more of a nuts and bolts guy over here. I don't got time to do all this.
That is exactly what he sounded like.
He's like, I gotta let the eggheads in the lab deal with all that nerd shit while I handle, you know, big picture stuff. No pun intended. He's like, but seriously though, look at them. The nerds, they love all that nerd shit. They get so happy. So really, I'm actually like, I'm kind of a philanthropist when you think about it. I'm just letting them connect their passions. Brings a tear to my eye when I think about it.
I hate him. You're making him way less likable, and that's hard to do.
It only gets worse.
I hate this guy.
And so Edison was very lucky because Dixon was a very smart guy. And he managed to take all these like stupid, weird, harebrained ideas that Edison was throwing at him and actually make them into functioning machines. And Edison drove him hard, which at one point, this was a rumor I found, is like at one point Dixon had to take an extended break because he had a minor nervous breakdown because Edison was just grilling him all the time, being like, you got to finish this.
That's the American way. Work someone until they...
like, hey, until they die. I'm going to take a moment here for this section of the story to talk about how much I do not understand what happens for this like next couple of years, because it's very confusing. I got angry. I don't like this. I didn't want to research this part of it. I'm still angry about it, but it's like people are making so many different things at the same time, and nothing that I was researching had like a clear thread about what was happening exactly. What I felt like Charlie trying to like connect stuff like on the wall, being like, this happened then. And I was like,
Pepe
and eventually
Sylvia.
I just got to a point where I'm like, this doesn't matter. This doesn't matter. A lot of stuff's happening at the same time. People are like, one person's got this patent, that guy's got this patent. It does all that really matters for this is that like Edison gets like a patent and he completes the kinetoscope. Right.
Okay.
Dixon's the one who does it, but there's just every little part of it separately is being developed, and he sort of just bullies his way into it. And he's like, "Okay, I'm going to be the first to market," and that's kind of what he's depending on. Is that like it's very confusing. Nobody knows what claim was happening at what point. People don't have accurate like receipts for what was happening at another time. So he's like, "Screw it! I'm just going to go forward. Like I am the one who did this first and file these patents before anybody else figures out, and there were none the wiser." So. The kinetoscope premiered and was held at the Brooklyn Institute of Arts and Sciences on May 9th, 1893. And in an apparent shout out to me, the first film publicly shown in the system was the blacksmith scene, also known as Blacksmiths.
Yeah. Really?
It was directed by Dixon, the guy who basically invented everything, and produced at the world's first movie-making studio. Oh, yeah. It was produced at the first movie-making studio, Black Maria, which, of course, was owned by Edison, and naturally, Edison takes credit for all of it.
He's
like, I'm the one who did this. The Black Maria, the studio, is kind of interesting. I'm not going to get into it because that's a whole other discussion, but it's like a lot of cameras have to do, especially early motion picture cameras, because it's moving so quickly through. it has to get developed so quickly. You need a lot of light for movie cameras to work, particularly at that time. So it's like... The Black Maria is this crazy thing where like the sunroof opens and it's like all this daylight's coming in so they can film on like one side, and then they have to flip it based on like what time of day it is so they can get the maximum amount of daylight to come into the camera. It's kind of cool. It's kind of wacky, but it's not super relevant to this story. But it might be something to look into at some point. It's interesting.
Okay.
And what matters is at this point, the kinetoscope is it's a big success. Everyone's like, oh, that's so super cool. We love it. We can see these clips. So suddenly these kinetoscope parlors start popping up everywhere. And for like basically about a quarter, you could see a 20-second, what they were calling, billing as living pictures on a peephole kinetoscope machine. Remember, the kinetoscope was the actual, it was like a box that you looked into.
Right.
Rather, there was not big projection yet at this point.
It was like a singular, like, what solo thing to do, like.
Exactly. Yeah. It was a solitary experience meant to be for like 20 seconds where you look at it and there'd be like a few of them in a row so you could look at like different things. And additionally, they're all one shots. So there's no editing or anything like that yet. And the big problem for film at this time is that film strips are super unstable and they can rip very easily. So they can only feed in so many feet of film before the thing gets busted and
freaks out. Whoa.
Freaks out and tears, is very unstable. So that's Edison for now. So around the same time, a guy named Woodville Latham and his two young boys, Otway and Gray, the most like 19th century names I've ever heard.
Otman?
Otway and Gray Latham. Around this time, they all moved to New York City because Otway and Gray had cleared out the assets of the family pharmaceutical business in Nashville.
Oh.
Because these idiots were some serious party boys who drank a lot of wine and loved to chase ass.
I mean, okay.
So they basically blow through the family fortune.
Wow.
And in a fact that attacks me personally, their dad kept working in the fields of chemistry and physics, which is literally what my father studied.
Really? And I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Well, I guess
and
I
his
did.
Sons, yeah. His sons
their
continue.
Son, his sons just went into the movie business?
I was going to say, they continued pursuing a career as cartoonists with a very mid podcast on the side. No, I'm kidding.
Just kidding.
I agree. It's mid at best.
It's mid for right now. Yeah, we'll get there.
Yeah, they worked for pharmaceutical companies in the city of New York, and of course, continued to screw around. So one day, they're on a grab ass field trip. They're just gallivanting around the city of New York, and they run into Enoch Rector. Speaking of insane names. Enoch Rector, not rectum, rector.
That's bad. That's not a good name.
Enoch was their old classmate at the University of West Virginia.
I think it's Enoch, by the way.
Enoch. Well, I remember Enoch. In Boardwalk Empire, they keep calling him Enoch. Enoch.
Oh.
Enoch.
I keep interrupting you. Nucky. With not good
they
things.
They keep calling him Nucky.
Nucky?
Nucky is his Rector? Name in the show. Nucky Rector. He's not a Jedi. He's Sith.
He's Sith for sure.
Yeah. Enoch is in New York and he's like, oh, hey, what's up, bros? How you guys doing? I haven't seen you since we were back in school. And, the Latham brothers are like, bro, we're just crushing ass left and right. And they like high five each other. And they're just like, we're doing the damn thing. And Enoch... Ooh. He's like, yeah, that's cool, I guess. But like, I'm trying to find an actual job because he had just graduated with a degree in engineering. And the Latham boys were like, bro, that's awesome. But check it out. Have you ever seen like movies before? And he's like, no. And so they're like, let's do this. So they take Enoch to a kinetoscope parlor on Broadway that had just opened up. And they're watching people like, videos of them like sneeze or do random stuff or whatever. And then they sort of start chatting. They're like, this is the business to get into. And legend has it that they thought it would be cool to watch boxing because people went apeshit over prize fighting.
Yeah.
And so they're like, yeah, all we got to do is get this Edison fella to photograph a fight for this machine. And then we can take that and invest it in some meme coin like Bowden and bam, we got back the family fortune.
They have that accent is the most beautiful Tennessee accent I've ever heard. Good
and
job.
Enoch, he's like, I don't know about the whole like investing in crypto part of it, but filming a fight sounds like a cool idea. But we need to figure out a way to capture clips longer than 20 seconds. Because remember, the film tears very easily. And the Latham boys were like, all right. They were like, great. Let's do this. But first, cocaine. And then they get like wasted and they keep partying. Yeah. So they're
so you're telling me that cocaine and film have been buddies since the beginning?
I mean, the for the actual correct record, there's no mention of them doing cocaine. It just says that they're like getting wasted and partying. But I would think it's not a step, you know, it's not a bridge too far to imagine that they're also doing cocaine at this moment. Yeah. Who knows? Yeah. They might be going to like opium parlors, but they're getting like messed up. Like all these guys, every article was just like, they had a reputation for being a bit of a part. Like they're all these like, you know, subtle thing, not so subtle, but like indirect ways of being like, they had a reputation for liking women and a nice glass of wine. So like, I'm just imagining them just getting trashed every day, everywhere that they go.
That's the Victorian way of saying that they were degenerates.
Oh yeah. These guys were total degenerates.
I love them.
They are pretty funny, but theoretically they're you know, high or drunk or whatever. And then they're like, boxing is cool. We should make videos that are longer so you can watch somebody beat the shit out of somebody else. That would be awesome. And so they establish the Kinetoscope Exhibition Company, and they recruit two popular boxers of the day, Michael Leonard and Jack Cushion, to fight a match. And Enoch reached out to the Edison Manufacturing Company and basically makes a deal with them. And together they were able to extend the length of film of the kinetoscope to go from 50 to 150 feet and reduce the number of frames shown per second so that each machine would be able to show a full 1 minute match.
Whoa.
And basically they stage this fight, and Jack Cushing and Michael Leonard go at it, and then they have like a quick round and it's like under a minute and that's it. And they film it. And they take that clip. So they're kind of like the first movie producers in a way, where they're like, we have this idea for this thing that's going to go for like longer distribution. And then they have to figure out what the actual tech is in order to make that happen. So an insane extrapolating analog for today would be like James Cameron being like, I want to make this motion capture, whatever, like 3D movie called Avatar. So I'm going to hire these guys to develop the technology, and then it makes a bunch of money.
Right. And then now we have that technology.
Right. So essentially they do this, and then they take this boxing match to these kinetoscope parlors, and it's this huge hit. It's like making all, I mean, in relative terms, it's not like a huge hit in terms of, you know, they're not making billions at the box office, but like it's, people love it. They're really into it.
Imagine being somebody that's like, I watched someone sneeze for 10 seconds and then you see a full boxing match. That would blow my Victorian mind. It would destroy me.
Exactly.
In a good way.
And yeah, and people are, they're really excited. And they're like, dude, this is awesome. We can watch people punch the shit out of each other. And then they start getting like really rowdy. It starts to become kind of chaotic in these places. And so, and then the Latham brothers were like, they're kind of like looking at these people, like looking into these boxes and getting all like crazy. And they're like, dude, these boxes are lame as shit. Nobody wants to just look into these boxes while they're watching somebody else fight. You can't like drink beer and cocaine and do cocaine and scream and fight each other with people around you.
If you're looking into a box,
yeah. They're like, and like, and like the mother of all ironies, they're like, we should be able to watch these fights bigger so that people can get excited and drink beer and fight each other and make it a communal experience.
Whoa. This was all just based on like a communal fight?
Yeah. So like,
that's so somewhere. Dude, that's so human. That's so basic human. It's like all we do is we don't let, even now it's like if someone's fighting, like I heard a gunshot outside my house a couple of years ago. I was out there. Before I could even think about my
safety.
You want
to go look at it.
I was like, whoa, what's going on? And then I'm like, oh, I could also get shot. I should go inside. But humans love this. We're just immediately like, I need to see. This is so cool. This is so cool. Okay.
And of course, at this time, don't forget, Le Prince, he's rolling in his grave because that was his idea.
Oh,
but nobody. So basically,
and
nobody
it's so
got
much
to see it,
classy.
Even though that was his idea. Yes, exactly.
It's like a classless version of his idea.
It's like these like bankrupt cokehead like crypto bros were like, I don't get to watch enough UFC fighting. Like it's too stupid to be tiny. I need to see it big. But also they need to be even longer. They're like, one round is cool, but like imagine an entire fight. And Edison, you know, he's sort of he's obliged them up until this point because he's like, yeah, fine, whatever. OK, cool. Yeah, sure. This film thing, I guess that's cute. But I also have this whole like Tesla electricity thing that I have to steal. I don't have time for like making movies longer. Like
this guy might patent his own invention before I can. Why do you want me to
do
this?
Yeah, he's like, and meanwhile, that while that's happening, lucky for them, Dixon, remember Dixon's the guy who essentially did all this stuff for Edison.
Yeah, he's like, the headhunter ant, and Edison is the kidnapper ant.
Kidnapper ant, exactly.
Yeah.
And so Dixon is like, look, I know my name is the one with dick in it, but straight up, Edison is the dick. He's like, that dude straight up sucks. I hate Thomas Edison. I don't care.
Really?
And he's like, I'm going to... So he basically starts secretly helping out the Latham brothers while he's still working for Edison. And he's like, I don't care. I don't care. I hate my boss. I'm quiet quitting. I'll do whatever. Like, just I just want Edison to fail.
I love him.
And he also introduces them to a man named Eugene Laust, who was a Frenchman who had previously worked for Edison as well.
And they all hate him, right?
Laust was also like, yeah, dude, homeboy sucks and is the worst boss of all time. I'll come work for you guys out of spite.
That's how you get a company going.
Yeah. And he agrees to become their chief mechanic, and the Lathams establish a new company that's called the Lambda Company, specifically for this new venture. And together, they come up with what's known as the Latham Loop. Now, I'm going to do my best to explain this because it's basically like, I don't want to over-explain this, and it's not super important to get into like all the different mechanics of all this, of how a film camera works. But remember, film camera at this time is essentially getting fed from one toilet paper roll to a next.
Right.
Remember, there's one on the top and there's one on the bottom. So it's like one roll here, one roll there, and it's just going brrr, and then it's passing directly in front of the lens of the camera.
Right.
And then that's where the light comes in. It's stopping. The light is, it's stopping very, very quickly, and the light is burning the image onto the film stock, and then it moves to the next one. And then it's like, this is basically how cameras work.
Crazy.
That's the photochemical process that's happening.
It's like so simple, but also very confusing.
Yeah. I mean, it's all these like iterative, crazy things that happen in order to arrive at the point where you're like, oh, it's pretty simple.
Right.
Essentially, the Latham loop adds an extra bit of slack on the top and the bottom as the film glows by the glass. Now I'll explain what this means. So essentially, there's two S's, like there's one sideways S at the top and then there's another sideways S at the bottom. Are you looking up an image of it?
I'm looking at a diagram.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
I can send you pictures if you want to see a picture, but if you already found one. So effectively what that does is it adds a little bit of slack at the top and the bottom of the film as it's passing in front of the lens. That's not connected to anything and it's not being pulled taut by anything. So what that means is as it's coming down, it essentially acts as like a little cushion so it doesn't like vibrate and jiggle and get all messed up by like all the stuff that's turning.
Right.
Does that make sense?
Yeah. We got to make sure we put this up so they can see.
So people can see like on the YouTube video. But
essentially,
it's just like it's a tiny bit of slack on the top and bottom that makes it feel like it's floating a little bit as it's passing through.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
And that's basically it. And like it's this... Again, like you said, it's so simple in the end, but like all the iterations it took to figure that out.
To get here.
But this little Latham loop essentially like is why we have feature films now. And
that's wild.
That's still basically how it functions. I mean, most movies now are shot digitally. They're not shot like on, I mean, they're I shouldn't say they're not, but a lot of films are now shot digitally just because of convenience and it's.
Right.
Anyway, that's a whole other like 50 other tabs as to why we don't.
Do they shoot any films like the old-fashioned way, or is it all digital?
No, there's still films shot on film, for sure.
Oh.
A lot of them are shot. I mean, as far as like big-budget films are concerned, there's like the huge directors like Christopher Nolan Tarantino and a couple of other guys that are like, we need to use our influence to make sure that like, you know, Kodak doesn't go out of business or like Technicolor still sticks around. Like they're all kind of throwing their weight behind it to make sure that it doesn't get lost. But a lot of movies are shot digitally, especially because so much stuff is done. It's like post-production that you don't necessarily see and it's easier to control and blah, blah. Anyway, whatever. That's a whole I'll talk about that for like 10 hours as far as why that's concerned.
But, I figured you could.
As far as how film cameras work, like that's the tech that like cameras still use when you're actually shooting film, which is kind of crazy.
Crazy. It's over 100 years old. That's crazy.
Oh, yeah.
It's just they kind of found something that worked. They're like.
Yeah. And so they figure out the Latham loop. And again, I'm going to take another moment to remind you how much I hate researching this tab and how much it made me want to like punch holes in the wall. Because again, everybody's doing different stuff and another guy's doing this. And then this other part about it that's really annoying is that there's like, they all have like the same variation of like four names. So it's like, this is like the Vitascope, and that's like the Technoscope, and this is the Phantomographamajig, and this one's the Kinetoveta Projectionoscopograph. And it's like, I hate all of them, and I hate all these people who are stupid and bad at naming things. And it just filled me with rage. And there's projection technology that's getting developed as well. And it's like, I don't know, whatever. It doesn't matter. If you really want to go into it.
Jumbled up stuff. Let's say we get through all the jumbled up stuff. What's at the other end?
Go through the jumbled up stuff. At the other end of it is like Edison puts a lot of companies out of business because he keeps suing them. And then there's like, he'll either buy a patent outright or he'll sue the other one for like infringement of some sort.
Oh, because he has all those like little claims or whatever.
Right. What so it's like, called? This is when he's like caveats.
Caveats, yeah.
So he's going into like overdrive. And this era becomes known as the patent wars, specifically.
I've heard about that.
You've heard of the patent? Yeah, this is when the patent wars begin.
Whoa, and it was about like film. The patent wars.
That's what I saw from what I was referring to. I don't know. I think they started over film. I don't know if that was like a broader term for like all kinds of other stuff. But from what I was reading, they kept referring to it as the patent wars. Slowly but surely, Edison starts acquiring different stuff. And he's just like, okay, I got this patent. I'm suing this guy. I'm like doing this. He's starting to like Frankenstein the shit together.
Question.
And yes.
Did he catch wind of his like worker, like the guy Dixon? Did he figure out that he was working for somebody else? And like, what was the, oh, you're going to get there. Okay. All right.
This is literally my next point.
Yes.
So
okay.
Dixon basically is like, bye, I quit. And he leaves.
He just flipped off the camera with both hands. So.
Oh, yeah. Sorry. Double middle just fingers it. And he's just like, oh, you're cool. You're cool. You're cool. I'm sorry. F you, F you, F you, F you. You're cool. I'm out.
Oh, Dixon. Hero.
He Jerry Maguire's it. Yeah. He's like, oh, who's coming with me? Dorothy, all that.
Nobody. And I don't know that reference.
He goes and...
But I'm going to laugh like I do.
Oh, it's Jerry Maguire.
Okay.
Anyway. So he leaves and he starts the Biograph Company. And the Biograph Company, through, again, reasons that are legally, it doesn't matter. He gets control of the Latham Loop patent, partially because he worked with these guys and he sort of had let them know, you know, they put him in touch with that French guy. And he's sort of like, they're kind of, they're associated a little bit. So he's just like, whatever, I have this other company. And the Biograph Company basically creates an entirely different camera that shot like 70 millimeter films known as Mutoscope. Again, idiot name. I hate all of these. They're so annoying.
Get more creative. That's terrible.
Yeah. And of course, Dixon's the guy inside. So he was like, cool. I know what this patent and this patent is because I literally created them and Edison stole it and put his name on it. So he knows exactly to be like, if you change this, 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 and this. He doesn't have shit on us. I can make my own company. And so he does that. And this is why.
Playing Edison's game. He's giving him a taste of his own. Medicine or whatever.
He's not playing Edison's game because he knew how to create things and didn't.
Oh. Okay.
Slight change is that he actually knew how to make things.
He gave him a taste of his own Edison.
Edison. Oh, 10 points. I like it.
Thanks. That takes me up to like, what, 15 points? I don't know.
I don't know. I just keep saying 10. But
good job. Thanks.
Basically, the moral of the story here is, be nice to the people that are working for you and don't take credit for their inventions.
Right.
You never
know. Or else they're gonna leave and make more money than you. Well, actually, I don't know the end of the story. Who knows?
It gets crazier. So
what?
Dixon. Okay. Yeah, right. Anyway, so now Edison doesn't have shit. He can't really, because Dixon sort of understands. Dixon gets that he's like, I get what this is. I get this camera. Now I have the Latham loop under, like this patent under my belt. He's just like, eat shit, Edison. I don't care about you anymore. Be nicer to people. A quick side note amongst all this, Louis Le Prince, his family is in the mix during this time trying to get some sort of legal recourse and get his name rightly established as the patent holder for the inventor of the motion picture camera. But Edison, of course, keeps fighting it.
Oh, what a ghoul. And he's, like, what he's actual, like leech.
Yeah, and he's fighting it. He's taking them to court. He's trying to, and he doesn't care because he's just like, whatever, lawsuit, lawsuit, lawsuit. Louis's son, Adolf, is in court fighting for his dad, and in 1898 appeared as a witness for the defense in a lawsuit brought by Edison against Biograph. So he's trying to, so Edison's trying to sue Dixon, and then they bring in Louis LaPrance's son, Adolf. And he testifies, and he's like, dude, my dad was entitled. He's like, Edison didn't even create this camera in the first place. He's just like, you know, I beat him to the patent, blah, blah, blah. They didn't win initially.
Oh.
And also, mysteriously, in 1901, Adolf LaPrance was found dead of a gunshot wound to the head in the Point Woods vicinity of Fire Island, New York.
Wait, he also died?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
He had been shooting duck in the area, and the official verdict was suicide, but I don't even know what to tell you here.
Oh, yeah, suicide.
Murderous. A duck would never. Ducks are great. That's my other thing that I love.
Have you met ducks?
I have met plenty of ducks.
They would drown another duck just for some bread. All right? That's my hot take on ducks. Or is it geese? No, geese are the mean ones.
Geese are the crazy ones,
I think I was thinking about geese. But... wow.
These are the ones that are aggressive.
So he shot himself while hunting for duck?
I mean, again, that's a whole other rabbit hole that you can go down that I tried. And I was like, it's not about his murder. I'm trying to remember that this was a good dude whose dad was a nice man who invented stuff that we use and we like. Don't let his murder be the thing that you remember about him.
Yeah.
But he fought for his dad to the end, which I thought was admirable.
I love him. I'm like trying not to go search for him right now, but I want to go read about Adolf LaPrance.
So by the turn of the century, Edison is pissed. He's just like, he's just seething. And he's like, why does everything bad always happen to me?
as he's suing 50 other people. I'm the victim.
No one has ever been wronged more than me in the history of the world.
Me, Edison.
Woke cancel culture must be stopped. It's ruining everything.
I hate
everyone
him.
Everyone is trying to ruin me. I have no hand in why all these people are trying to destroy me.
The fuck?
The woke must be stopped.
As he shoots someone in the back of the head while hunting ducks.
Anyway. Basically. And all these different studios and companies are making cameras and film stock and projection devices and theaters and arcades and their own movies. And Edison's just like, they're all attacking me all the time. They're trying to destroy me. So what does he do?
Oh, steals?
He goes to therapy.
No, he doesn't.
Of course he doesn't go to therapy. That's a kid. That's a joke.
I got excited. I was like, wait, no.
Yeah.
Why would anyone
go to
therapy? No,
that's not what powerful men do.
No.
No, he makes it everyone else's problem. That's of course that's what he does.
Okay.
So he swallows the tiniest infinitesimal bit of pride and he decides to issue a truce. And it took more fighting, but even Biograph and Dixon agree to hear him out.
Wow.
And he essentially gets all these different companies together and he... I don't know. This didn't happen exactly like this, but in my mind, it's kind of like one of these mafia sit downs where they're all like in a giant table with like all the heads of the different families are there. And, you know, and Edison sits there and he's just like, oh, listen, there's too much fighting amongst the five families. And they're like, yeah, dude, you're insane. You're trying to sue everybody all the time.
You're
and he's
the
like,
one.
Let's not point fingers here.
No.
No. Let's not point fingers and figure out who's responsible for all this. But the truth is that infighting is bad for business, and we've lost sight of the real enemy here.
I'm bad for business.
Who's the real enemy?
That's what he's pretty much saying.
Basically,
I'm bad
for
my own business because I can't stop because I'm addicted to greed.
And he's like, we got to fight the real enemy here. And they're like, who's the real enemy? And he's like, the real enemy here is... the head chopping ant.
Yeah.
The real enemy is the American consumer.
No.
What we need to do is bond together and form a monopoly. I mean, sorry, a company, quote unquote. And so he makes propositions. He's like, if we form this company, if anyone who is not part of our group tries to film a movie, rent a camera, distribute a film, or even like project one, they'll need to pay us a cut. This is in the consumer's best interest. Everybody wins.
I win. I mean, everybody wins.
Yeah. And someone's like, that's a great idea. And then another guy's like, yeah, and if anyone tries to not pay up, we can break their legs, or their film will mysteriously go missing, or their cameras will break. Har, 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 har.
Wait, people were on board with this?
And that's how in 1908, the Motion Picture Patents Company was founded. And they're all like high-fiving, and they're chomping on their dick-shaped cigars, and they're just slapping each other on the back, and they're like, congratulations. And then they continue to push down their fear that death comes for every man.
Everybody.
No matter how much you control, how much money you had, or how much
you
feel.
When we're all dead, we're all buried in the same dirt.
Ding, 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 ding.
There it is. Oh, shoot.
Did it.
Dang it.
There it is.
I didn't mean for that one to come out, but
it's
true.
I set you up for that one. That was what it was there for. Yeah.
Oh, I'm so predictable.
So they're like, yeah, let's do it. And for a few years, they do exactly that. And they just make money. They are like, they're this absolute scourge on everybody in the area.
Sweet. For context, is there any film, like what are people watching? How are people consuming this art medium? Is there like theaters at this point, or
there's still these parlors, right?
Okay.
Where they're looking at, I think it basically, like, the short version of it, there's a bunch of little stuff happening at the same time. It's not yet consolidated into like one big thing.
Got it.
Europe, by the way, there's this whole other, I didn't have time to get into it,
no.
But like, if you go read about the Lumiere brothers, and there's a whole thing, there's a whole other scene that's happening in France and in Europe that they try to enter the American market, and Edison just like pisses them off and like figures out a way to get them to leave.
Slaps them right down. Like,
yeah.
Nope.
That's another rabbit hole. Again, there's a lot of stuff that you could sort of go down
through
this. But essentially, Edison becomes like, the MPCC becomes like the thorn in the side of like every filmmaker in the area on the East Coast. And people are like, bro, what the hell? I'm getting taxed on my tax for paying taxes for these dickheads. I hate everything. And Edison, of course, he doesn't like calm down after this. He actually gets more insane.
Oh, well,
and he's literally
makes sense.
Suing like everybody that's like doing anything is getting sued. There's like dudes running around like screwing up film sets, or like screwing up their, you know, their film reels that are getting developed. He's out of control.
Why is
he suing
that?
Like,
I would love to know whatever it is, whatever personality disorder he has, like I would love to have him be like analyzed. Like, why does he do this stuff?
He's a narcissist and a psychopath,
yeah,
I imagine.
You're right. It's narcissism. I forgot
it's,
those people
it's
exist.
It's probably psychopathy. I mean, not that I'm like a doctor or anything, but it's
no,
probably
but
like
there's some,
he feels nothing.
There's like no empathy. There's got to be no empathy involved, because he just goes, wow. Anyway, continue.
Yeah. He's just suing everybody and screwing it up for everybody. And I think this is the case. I'm not sure 100%, but from what I understand, this is where the term like independent filmmaker comes from. It's like they're the indies who are separate from the people who are like approved by the MPCC. I think.
That would make sense.
Now we use it in terms of like indie, like outside the studio system. But I think technically this is actually before that, even the studio system's not even a thing yet.
Right.
So, again, he's suing all these indie filmmakers. He's suing them before he's had his morning coffee, or like while he's on the toilet. Like, it's the worst.
He gets up and sues somebody. He pees and then sues somebody.
This actually, and so, you know, filmmakers are, they're a passive bunch who who don't like to get in fights.
Never.
They're rule followers.
They work well together.
Yes, exactly. No, they're livid. They're pissed.
All the time, 100% of the time.
All the time. They're like, I hate this man. He's the worst. He's a cancer on this business. And the other thing that's really important to remember here, too, is like, this is the birth of feature filmmaking. This is literally a brand new, like, artistic medium has been born out of this. And this did not exist like 10 years before.
And there's just this like virus of a man just infecting it. Wow.
And all these people are like, you know, for better or worse, some of them go on to become like, you know, crazy studio heads or stuff. But people are like, dude, there is so much shit you can do with this. Like movies are going to, like people are like, it's going to be a thing. Like it can be so much more than what it is now. And they're really excited. They're trying to like experiment. They're trying to make new stuff. Like, and Edison is just out here ruining vibes. Like he's just ruining the vibes. He's just ruining it for everyone. If there's one thing that all artists across all disciplines will tell you is that you absolutely under any circumstances cannot ruin the vibes.
You can't. It'll ruin everything. And it'll make everyone angry.
We're stubborn.
And broken.
And so, and for sure, that's a given.
Yeah, yeah. It's a given,
Basically, these indies start talking to each other and they start sharing. They start to get into like these little meetings and they're chatting and then they start exchanging some ideas. And, you know, one guy chimes in and he's like, you know, because remember, he's this is all in like New York and New Jersey. That's where he's based in Menlo Park in New Jersey. That's where Edison is. So
that's where
his claws extend is on the East Coast. And so all these guys are kind of like, yeah.
The Menlo Park in California was named after the Menlo Park in New Jersey in honor of Edison.
Also filled with a bunch of dickhead tech people who ruined the lives of everybody. Very appropriate.
Whoa, it works.
It's it was written. Interesting. So they start talking amongst each other and they say, you know, I bet you if we head west, it would be a lot harder for this pants shitter to keep tabs on us.
Oh.
It's not, he doesn't have all those like goons and like spies all
maybe
around him. Like there's no way that
something
he can
to shit his pants for him. I don't know. Do something different.
Take credit for it.
Yeah. Okay. So they move. Okay. I'm putting it all together now. Okay.
So they're like, yeah. So he's like, I bet you it's not going to be as easy for him to file lawsuits from 3,000 miles away. Also, California is pretty much sunny for like most of the year.
Oh, they need all that light.
Yeah, the light. Also, it's like, you know, consistent filming conditions as well. So it's like you can't necessarily go film in the rain. So there's a lot of light. The weather's pretty predictable. And then this other guy is like, you know, I heard about this town that's got some pretty lax patent laws.
No way.
It's Holly something. Hollyhocks, forget me nots. Hollywood.
My mind is blown right now. Wait, that's why they came to Hollywood?
So
because the patent laws were lax?
This is there's a lot of things that contributed to it, but this is a big driving force. Basically, everyone was like,
everyone hated Edison so much that they moved to California. what? Okay.
It's not the only reason, right? There's immigration. Right. There's all kinds of different things. But this is a large. I just want to make sure it's not the only reason, but this is a big part of it. Where everyone was like, "Please die, Thomas Edison. We're running away from you because you are destroying this medium before it has a chance to actually like get on its legs because you are litigious and insane."
And insane, yeah. What? Okay.
Yeah. I had the same reaction as you did. I was like,
this is so cool. I love that like a bunch of angry artists is the reason that LA exists. Or the reason it exists in the way it does.
So a bunch of these guys move out west and they set up studios in Hollywood and they start making movies and they start creating. This is kind of interesting too. So they start using, they start creating movie stars. Because they realize that, like, if you have a person who's appearing in multiple films, that person becomes
people
a commodity.
Like that.
And then that's marketing, that's storytelling across the... Because, again, Edison is not a genius. He is not a person who is a visionary. He doesn't understand what this thing is for. He is just desperately trying to control it for his own financial gain. He doesn't believe in this as a medium. He believes it as a thing that can be controlled and can be profited off of. He is not a creative type.
He's not an artist. There's nothing in him that has artistic integrity at all.
No, and people are like, well, what if we made feature films? What if we're innovating on this? So it's like LA becomes this place where it's not under the guise of Edison, and it starts flourishing, and they start making all these crazy things, all these big movies. And Additionally,
so cool.
These dudes all get together and they form a little alliance and they're like, hey, guess what, Edison? We're making movies now. We're kind of making money and you can keep suing us. But guess what we're going to do? We're suing you.
And they got big enough to sue him back.
They file a lawsuit against Edison and the MPCC.
Right.
For being a monopoly. And this shit goes all the way to the Supreme Court.
What? What year
and
is this?
It becomes, this is, I think the first one's 1915 and the second one's 1917.
Okay,
those are the court filing years.
Right around the time the other monopolies are also getting kind of broken up. I think so.
Yeah, this is kind of in the air and in the water.
Right.
I feel it. I smell it in the air.
I feel it in the water.
Just to use it again. I feel it in the wind.
There was another. Go on.
So they file, and two of these cases go to the Supreme Court. One was MPCC versus Universal Film Manufacturing Company in 1917, which is an early example of the patent misuse doctrine. It held that because a patent grant is limited to the invention described in the claims of the patent law does not empower the patent owner to extend the scope of the patent monopoly by restricting the use of the patented article of materials necessary for this operation, but forming no part of the patent invention, or to place downstream restrictions on the articles, making them subject to conditions as to use. A lot of mouths, but like, you can't patent some shit and make it impossible to use without paying money to the patent.
Thank you for simplifying that for me. I was following and then I
if
fell
it's
right
part
off.
Of it. Yeah. So if you make a car and someone patents a tire, you can't just be like, I have to pay the person who invented the tire in order for this car to work. No, you should be able to just buy a tire and then put it on
a tire.
And it's a tire. That's a vast oversimplification of this. But I think that's mostly what it is. And then the other was United States versus MPCC, which was a civil antitrust prosecution that found that defendants violated sections 1 and 2 of the Sherman Act by establishing control over trade in films, cameras, projecting machines, and other accessories of the motion picture business by their patent licensing practices and other conduct. They lost. And the MPCC was forced to disband. No, they didn't lose. MPCC lost.
Okay. Good.
Yeah.
Wait, the Sherman Act. Have you talked about the Sherman Act, or is that another tab I've like been reading about? What is the Sherman Act?
You've probably been reading about.
Okay. Great. I think I have a tab open on the Sherman Act. No.
Maybe that's one we'll get into. I'd be interested. But basically, Thomas Edison had to eat shit and break up the MPCC because he sucks.
Art won.
They lost.
Yeah.
And they disbanded, which brings us to our conclusion, which I was going to make this reference, which I'm sure you will not understand, which is
try me.
Cue the song Layla Piano Exit. Din, 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 din. You don't know any of this. It's from that movie. People will understand what I'm referencing.
With the person, and it's like super, like, yeah.
Dixon's association with Biograph. Remember Dixon, the guy who created stuff, but who ultimately ended up going into business with him still when they made, he was still part of the MPCC, don't forget.
The Latham brothers. He was, did he move west?
Dixon's the dude that used to work for him. No, remember he worked for Edison, then he split off and made Biograph, and then Biograph ended up becoming part of the MPCC. So he became part of the problem.
That's right.
Because he held the patent for the Latham, loop. Because Edison was like, that's the crucial part of this. His association with Biograph ended inexplicably in 1911. There's no one knows why.
Interesting.
So before the MPCC was broken up, but really only like a year and a half after that that monopoly was founded. He spent his last years quietly in his house in Twickenham, England, and died on September 28th, 1935 at the age of 75. He died without being given credit for his contributions to the history of modern filmography until more recently. So historians and writers like a couple of years ago, I mean, more than a couple of years ago, but like more recently sort of dug into it and did the research. They're like, hey, this guy Dixon actually kind of did all of this and Edison sucks.
I think I wonder if it was back when, do you remember when the cartoonist, the Oatmeal, did that viral cartoon about how Edison's the worst and he screwed over Tesla and he screwed over.
Yes.
And the internet went nuts. Everyone's like, Edison sucks. And I wonder if it was around the same time that they were like, what else did Edison ruin? And maybe that's when they found, I don't know. That's a theory.
Yeah. Or or it might have been that they had figured that out and then this person that made the comic read it or something. Chicken Probably. And egg. So basically now we know, but that wasn't the case until, you know, more recent times.
Dang.
Thomas Edison died on October 18th, 1931. Cool. That's it. That's all I'm going to say
Good.
About him. I just thought
Get
it was
out of
cool
here.
He died. Yeah.
He did. What if he...
Most importantly...
What if he didn't? What if he never died? That would be more worrying if he was still around, like a 200-year-old man just suing everybody.
He's dead in 1931, but the heroes of the story, most importantly...
Okay.
The Latham brothers.
The drunk...
The Latham brothers.
Messy.
The messy, ass-grabbing... crushing it left and right,
fun having.
They were outlived by their father because they died young.
Doing what?
From a rare case of being too awesome and partying too hard.
So what? They were found in like a gutter somewhere? How'd they die?
Literally, that's it. They partied too hard and were like,
Are
I don't know
kidding?
Exactly what the cause of death, but they were just like, these dudes partied too hard and died young. And then their dad was like, oh shit, my sons are dead. That sucks.
That's a pretty dope way to die. Party till you die.
They're up in bro heaven doing God knows what.
I mean, you know what they're doing.
Yeah, that's true. But assuming that they didn't do anything horribly inappropriate, in which case I will rescind this. But Latham Brothers, we salute you for being really excited about boxing and helping
and
get like your weird cocaine-fueled brains to hire your nerd engineering friend to figure out a way to make movies that were longer than 20 seconds long. Thank you.
And now look at the movie industry. It's huge.
Definitely not collapsing on and of itself once again.
Oh, yeah. No, no. Look, it dies and comes back every time. It has some new form.
Yeah.
Wow,
mostly,
dang,
I thought,
dude.
This is, as I was reading this stuff like the past couple of weeks, and then they filed, you know, the time that we're recording this, they just filed that lawsuit against Apple.
I didn't hear about this.
Oh, yeah. They're doing like an antitrust lawsuit. It was just last week or something that the DOJ did. It's weird because it's about the iPhone being like a, you know, monopoly, which is weird because I thought that they, I assumed that they would have done this about the App Store, because the App Store kind of makes more sense as a monopoly because like there's all these crazy
iPhone,
fees that
right.
you have to pee.
But
I don't know. That's a whole other explanation of, I don't know why DOJ, they probably have some strategy or whatever, but like I thought that the App Store was probably a better metaphor for how the MPCC was working, where they're like, you can't do, we own all of this. You can't do
all
this until
it.
You pay us this much money. Yeah.
I wonder, because I know that we're kind of at another point, like, because, you know, history goes in cycles. We're kind of at another point where there's so many monopolies. I wonder how and when these ones will be dismantled and what it will look like, because it's going to happen. It always does.
If I were to postulate in a terrifying way first, just for a second, the monopolies that exist now have so much control over our day-to-day lives in a way that these companies did not.
You're right.
And they...
Oh, you're right.
I mean, I was texting you about this the other day where I was like, I got too worked up and my wife was like, you need to like sit down for a moment because you're getting really upset.
Take some deep breaths.
Take some deep breaths. But I was like, the idea that a company controls our social interactions and that's how they make money to me is like... It's just
wild.
What even is that? Like, that's an insane thing to monetize.
But they do it.
That's literally their business model is like, what is it? Audience retention, which is just getting you addicted to being online and being on your phone. And
it's
keeping
so
on
scary,
as
dude. It's so scary. And like the idea that it is so woven into our like how we operate as human beings. They've made themselves needs that we can't get rid of. That's terrifying. Like, without my phone,
and you don't even
how would I
know.
Do anything? I wouldn't have a career.
Yeah. I would say I wouldn't have one either, but I don't have one to begin with. But still, I understand. I'm scared for you.
Talking about. Look, when society collapses, I've always said this, I would make a great scavenger. I wouldn't be very good at cooking, but you could send me out. I could do raids. I'd be good at that. Don't get rid of me because I'm an artist. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah, I think we're creative thinkers.
When we rebuild.
Right. I'll be there to hear things that are really far away.
I'll dig stuff. Yeah. My ears, my ADHD brain. I'll be digging. I'll be digging graves. I can listen to like enemies like way far away because ADHD.
Me too. Sarah and I always joke where we're like, oh, like what happens when the apocalypse comes? And Sarah's like, I don't know. I'm cool. I was like, I'm going to spend all this time prepping and getting ready and trying to do stuff. And Sarah will just be like, well, hey, what's up? And they'll be like, oh, she's funny. Like, we'll bring her along. And meanwhile, I'm going to like trip and fall on a knife and like get like kill myself by accident before it even starts. That is, that's my tab.
That is wild.
It's very long.
I just like, my favorite part about it is the rage. It's like, because I do most things out of like pure spite and rage, as you do probably do
totally.
Too.
Very
like,
much so.
That is absolutely something I would do, would be like, I hate Edison. And so I'm going to take this and I'm going to leave and I'm going to do it better somewhere else.
That's a common gene we have amongst us as creatives.
Yeah, what's with that?
Defiance.
We're fine. And then we're insane when somebody goes too far.
And then we're insane, yeah.
Yeah. No, I just, that to me is like, that's innovation. Spite. Driven out of spite. It's relatable.
I love it. People are always like, don't be angry. And I'm like, no. Anger was what drives a lot of this.
That's
spite.
The only reason I've done anything.
Yeah.
Is because someone's been like, I don't think you can do that. And I'm like, oh, no.
Or you're not that good at that. And I'm like, oh, really?
Ooh. I'll show you. Where you're like, hey, Hannah doesn't do very good at this. And I'm like, uh-oh, new life goal, prove this one person wrong.
Yeah, or they're like, you're kind of a screw-up, aren't you? And I'm like, guess what? I'm going to be the biggest screw-up of all time.
I always got the, like, you're a slacker. I'm like, oh, okay then.
Here we go.
Did you get that too growing up? Like, you're just a slacker?
All the time. Yeah.
Constantly.
Oh, it doesn't apply himself. I'm like, no, I don't apply to myself to your stupid class that's dumb that I don't care about.
I don't care about any of this.
Meanwhile, I'm sitting in my room for like 6 hours at a time at like as a 7-year-old, like copying entire X-Men books.
Exactly. I go in my room by myself for hours. Like you said, just copying comic books. Yeah, I'm applying myself. Just not to math.
Just not to the other thing. It's funny. My mom used to say to my sister, she'd be like, go check out, like, your brother hasn't made a noise. And like, what the hell is he? Is he dead? And then she would just be like, hello. And I'd be like, hey, what's up? just looking at Wolverine over here. It's cool.
I'm looking at him a lot and I'm drawing him over and over.
Yeah.
I did this thing where like, I was the same way where like, I would just disappear into my room. And one time I remember being like, did you ever go to Great America when you lived up here?
Oh yeah, of course.
Yeah. Great America is a theme park in the Bay Area. And I remember one time I was in my room by myself doing something. And I was like, I'm going to create my own Great America in this room. And so I built Great America out of cardboard and string.
Do you have pictures of it?
And I was in there. I don't think so. It was like 90-something. And I was... My room was an entire cardboard theme park for my Beanie Babies. And I was in there for days. Like, I think my mom was like, yeah, keep doing this. Because she actually had time to do stuff. But I was just like... I gotta make drop zone. I gotta put my Beanie Babies on drop zone. Cardboard drop zone. And, you know.
That's awesome.
Took me a whole weekend.
The thing is,
so stuff
literally,
like that.
Literally, you were born too early. If you were born now, you would have made a YouTube video of it and you streamed it and you would have been the billionaire. That's
like,
literally
this kid makes
all
her own theme
these
park.
Kids are doing. Yeah.
Yeah. I also made a...
I'm Parkgirl on YouTube. Like and subscribe. Ring that bell. I don't know why you have a 1920s voice, but you do.
Ring that bell.
Ring that...
Donate now and I'll send more Beanie Babies into space with my
why would you like
rocket.
To fight? Yeah. Should this Beanie Baby throw up on the floor? I don't know. Again, that's the voice.
Well, sorry. I didn't mean to derail it into like personal stories, but I deeply related to that.
I deeply want to see this picture of your Six Flags made out of cardboard with. Please ask your mom or your dad and see if they have pictures of it.
Because I think it was at the time when our video camera and camera were both broken. And my sister likes to bring this up. She's like, there's no pictures of me as a kid. And my mom's like, our stuff was broken. So I think it was during those years where like we have no documentation.
Well,
I'll ask.
If it's out there. Yeah, ask. I'd love to see it. It'd be really cool. Also, I think that's cool as shit that you did that.
I mean, I think as a mom, I would love if my kid did that. If she was just like, I'm in my room all day. I'm like, whoa, cool.
I'd like to point out the obvious, which is a lot's changed because you and I are literally in our own rooms right now, and we have a podcast together where we sit and draw in the same room and entertain ourselves. That's basically nothing has changed.
Oh my goodness! So what? School was just time. We just went to school to fill time between staying in our room as a kid and staying in our room as adults.
Pretty much. Maybe you learned some stuff. Maybe we learned some stuff along the way.
I learned some critical thought and made some friends. But in the end, I'm back here. That's okay. Kind of cool. I like that a lot.
It's kind of funny.
Yeah.
Anyway, why don't we pull up
our tabs?
Because I absolutely don't want to look at this shit anymore.
Yeah, dude. Just launch it. Launch it into space. Like my Beanie Babies.
What are we going to do? Is there a decapitating ant sound that we can use? Or is there like a, I guess if we can combine the two of like a film projector, like an old timey, like projecting, and then it's a movie of a man getting decapitated or something.
A man? Hang on. I lost the,
and then blood splurting everywhere. I guess you can find it from like an old crazy, like
execution?
Kung Fu movie or something. I don't know.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. An execution or a guillotine.
A guillotine. I was just about to say a guillotine, the slice of a guillotine and then a cheering as the French would have done. Like a canned cheer.
As the MPCC is disbanded.
Yeah. Okay. We're going to guillotine these tabs. Give us a countdown? Cut their heads off. Yeah. Okay. Ready? 3, 2, 1. Close. I had to close like four of them.
That's so good.
Yep. You're done,
so
man.
I'm sick of looking at this. It was so much. It was so much time. And I like skipped half of this stuff. It was just like, this was messy. It's messy. It's not, there's no clear thread of it. It drove me nuts. Anyway.
I could tell that there was just like stuff happened and then this came from it. And then stuff happened and then this came from it. And that's kind of the only way you can see it. Anyway.
Yeah. There was not like an easy, clear narrative thread to follow, which is what was difficult about it. But anyway, I'm so glad to have it out of my brain, but that's what we do for you guys because we love you.
Yeah.
We want you to be entertained.
And also because we would do this anyway. And we can't stop talking.
I think this would have been a tab that I would not have followed through on.
Really?
Because I'd have been like, this is too complicated. But I set myself up last week by being like, this is what I'm going to do for my next tab. But I was like, oh no, I have to actually do it.
Oh.
Okay. Moving on to listener emails.
Yeah.
You will go first.
Mine is from Paul from Washington State. And Paul is my friend. You've met Paul.
Oh, it's the Paul.
It's Paul. Yes.
Okay, Paul. Hey, Paul.
Paul. You've met Paul. We rode in his van.
Paul's
so
a funny
he
guy.
Says Paul's a one of a kind person, I would say, and that's a compliment. He says it's titled "Fun Animal Facts." He says. Love the podcast. I was roommates with Hannah in college, and hearing her giggle over tragedies is just as delightful now as it was then. Thanks, Paul. Nice. I have the ADHD where I open a ton of tabs. Same. Overwhelmed. Oh, get overwhelmed and then close everything. Right now.
Oh.
Interesting. Right now, my only tabs are, what is the difference between a xylophone and a glockenspiel? The Wikipedia for Eurovision 2021, and an article about pig orgasms. Paul.
This tracks for who Paul is.
From what you've met, yeah. The last one is because my coworkers didn't believe me when I said they last for 30 minutes. We had We had a huge company in-person get-together, and I was telling gross animal facts. And so then he links the thing, and then he just links a bunch of other...
A pig orgasm.
A pig orgasm.
Here's a 30-minute YouTube video for you to watch.
It's a Guinness Book of World Records.com page for pig orgasms.
I just had this thought where I wish we had read this earlier, because that could have been our tab closing sound as a pig orgasm. It would have added an extra 30 minutes to the episode. Here's the real question is, what do you think a pig orgasm sounds like? We need to come up with this right now without actually ever having heard one.
I think it just sounds like a pig.
You don't think there's a special noise that they make when they're having an orgasm?
I think it's just regular like oinking sounds, but maybe prolonged a little bit.
Like oink, 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 oink. I don't know.
I don't either.
I think it's funnier if there's another sound that like you never hear unless like it's at a different frequency.
It just sounds like a regular human. The pig as an orgasm. It just sounds like a human woman.
But not a person having an orgasm, just like a
screaming.
Yeah. Pig orgasms for 30 minutes is just the Wilhelm scream.
Okay. And then he says, but while I'm at it, here are some other fun facts I shared with my coworkers. The satellite male tree frogs lay in wait while breeding tree frogs make the mating call. Then they try and sneak attack the female at the last second.
Oh.
Frog rape, Paul? All right.
Frog, that's more than rape. What do you even call that? They're like sneaking in when like it's like you're ready to go for one guy and then but I'm saying it's addition to that.
Oh.
It's like because they think they're having sex with one guy and then this other dude sneaks in.
Whoa. That's true. It's like snipe. It's like
snipe rape.
A lot of words have been said in an order which I've never said them before. And then he says, all you need is the title for this one. Duck penises show arms race between sexes. And then he didn't expound on that at all. He just left a link. Thank you.
He's like, that's for you,
Paul,
to read about.
For real. Thank you, Paul. And I wish you guys knew Paul. Because all of this
Paul
makes
sense. Paul is hilarious. Yes. If you knew Paul, you'd be like, yep, all of this tracks.
Yeah, it's tracks. Anyway, thanks, Paul.
Thank you, Paul, for writing in. It's lovely to hear from you. You're a funny guy. I feel like Paul would like hearing his name on the pod. Paul. Hello, Paul. Paul. Paul.
Hi, Paul.
Paul. Paul. Hi, Paul.
Beautiful.
Okay, next email. Email number 2 is from yet another person named Sarah who is not my wife.
There's so many.
Sarah. There's so many Sarahs. It's like a common
name. When's your
name.
Wife going to write in?
Literally never.
Yes. Yeah. Neither will my husband. Yeah.
That's what Sarah always says. She's just like, I have to hear you all. Why would I listen to your podcast? I have to live with you. She's like, oh, that's cute. Other people listen to you talk. Yeah, try it.
And they
for
like
longer
it?
Than an hour. Yeah, and they like it. She's like, are they well? No, that's not true. She's not that mean about it, but she does joke about it.
Yeah.
Sarah writes, hi, Kaveh and Hannah. As a girl whose laptop is on the verge of dying, thanks to the number of tabs I currently have open, I love the podcast. The tab I'm currently obsessing over is about frogging. Frogging being P-H-R-O-G-G-I-N-G, not F-R. Essentially, have you heard of frogging before?
No.
No. Similar, actually. Oh, wait. Was the other one from a frog?
Yeah.
The rapey
the snipe
one
rape.
You said? Was
yeah.
it were those frogs? Oh,
those
no
are
way.
Frogs.
Okay. Snipe rape.
Snape.
Essentially, frogging is the act of a person secretly living inside of another person's home.
Ah! It's the same, pretty much.
Yeah, this can mean between the walls, hidden in a walled-off closet, or vibing in the attic. It's
yeah,
terrifying.
Have you ever heard of the Colorado Boulder? It's the Boulder Spider-Man. Boulder Spider-Man.
I do not know about this, no.
It's just a dude that lived in the attic in Boulder, Colorado. Go on.
Ooh. Let's see. Here's my personal favorite story. The Campbell family noticed some odd activity in their home, such as items out of place, strange noises, and food disappearing. Weird, but not entirely unexplainable. They had a couple of kids and assumed that they must have been messing with things.
Oh.
Everything came to a head when the family returned a day early from a trip and found a man in their house.
The police
discovered that the frogger planned to put sedatives in the family's food, intending to perform surgical experiments.
I don't like that.
New anxiety unlocked.
Yeah, I was about to say new fear.
Not only was the frogger already criminal minds material, but he also hacked all of the Campbell's technology to learn more about them. He even had a journal where he wrote all about his surgery plans. Oh, God. Okay. Horrifying.
I hate this so much.
After learning about this concept, I thought that I was safe in my New York City studio apartment, but nope. Froggers are found equally often in apartment buildings and houses. I don't like this.
I don't like this at all.
Better hope that the next strange noise you hear is a ghost, I guess.
Sarah.
God, why would you do this to us?
We both have anxiety.
Here's my solution. Okay. We invite them to be another person on the podcast if we have a Frogger, and then distract them that way, and then we get ants to chop their heads off.
Oh my gosh, good idea. Yeah. I'll dress the ant.
Yeah, let me wrap this up. So thank you both so much for the podcast. I was laid off last week. Sorry about that. That sucks. And I love being able to open up fun tabs for a change, i.e. not LinkedIn or Indeed, hoping all that unexplained noises are ghosts rather than men in my walls, Sarah. Thank you, Sarah. I'm sorry to hear that you are unemployed. That sucks.
Yeah, that sucks.
But glad that we can give you a place to make you feel a little bit connected to other people, and that the tabs that you're looking at got to be on a show. So you can just use that. I think you should put that under your accomplishment section of your LinkedIn page. Be like, my tab got read on this podcast and also horrified the hosts.
And my special ability, my special skills are terrifying people.
So let's go ahead and wrap it up. Thank you guys for listening. Please follow sponsor links. Please rate the show.
Yeah.
Please, tell your friends.
Spread this and wide.
Screw the algorithms.
Screw them all.
We don't got the money. We don't got the money to be getting like ad campaigns.
No. Just send this to your friends. Do you know somebody who likes motion pictures? Send them this.
Send this to them. Do you know somebody that likes or doesn't like having
people?
Do you know somebody who likes having people in their walls? Send them this podcast.
Send them. Yeah. Or ant scientists. Anybody.
Yeah. Please. What's his name? The ant scientist? The cool guy? The Adrian?
Adrian Smith, I think.
Adrian Smith. If you know Adrian Smith.
I could be making that up.
Or not Adrian Smith.
Send
Why don't you look
him.
At your own notes?
I can't. Oh my gosh, that's a really good idea. Give me a second. Adrian
Smith. This is a plea. Adrian Smith. If you know Dr. Adrian Smith, the ant scientist, please send him this episode because we love him and we want to meet him, and he sounds like a cool dude.
Send this episode to people.
Send it.
And rate.
Send it to everybody.
And review. And follow us at 500 Open Tabs on everything.
Oh, I forgot to say. Yes, of course. Also, if you have your own tab, 500opentabs@gmail.com, 500opentabs@gmail. Let us know what your tab was. Make sure to include the link. Let us know your name and where you're from, and we will try our best to read it on the show. I think that about wraps it up. Obviously, our socials. I'm at PermaFriends on Instagram. I'm at Cafeterian on Twitter.
I'm at Hannah Hillam on everything, usually.
And
except for Facebook. I'm Verbal Vomit on Facebook.
Yes. Please.
Oh, and I have a book.
And follow us
my book is up for pre-order. So if you search Cat People on Amazon or Barnes & Noble or my name, you can find it.
Cat People, go check it out. Again, I imagine it's a cool book. I have no idea.
It's fine.
I haven't seen it. It's fine. That's quite
Look, if I look at it again, I will throw my iPad like a Frisbee into the ocean because I can't look at it anymore.
Listen, what if I told you that Thomas Edison wants to make a Cat People book and holds the patent to it?
I'd throw him into the ocean. I'd dig him up. I'd roll his corpse down a hill in the Marin Headlands, watch him fall into the ocean.
Point is that he's trying to promote his cat book, so you have to promote yours harder out of spite. I'm trying to just
please buy my
the
book.
Yeah, there you go.
Buy my book. Screw Thomas Edison.
Yeah. Anyway, that's it, everybody.
Yep.
Stay Josie. Keep it Josie.
Mm-hmm.
We'll see you next week.
Next time. Yeah. Bye.
Okay, bye.
I'm saluting like people can see me.